Life and the World. Your editor, Frank Blair.
Good evening. Tonight, Indonesia. Thousands of Dutch nationals last month jammed piers and crowded departing ships in Indonesian ports. The lush and sprawling South Pacific nation had been their home. Many had been born there, and many were Eurasians of mixed Dutch and Indonesian lineage. Now they were bound for a wintry Holland they had never seen, where they might not have jobs or even homes. The Dutch were finished in Indonesia. To bring you a penetrating insight into this deep problem, we're devoting our entire program tonight to this story. First, Pauline Frederick interviews Mohammed Sharif, minister, counselor to the Permanent Mission of Indonesia to the United Nations.
Mr. Minister, your country is involved in a serious dispute with the Dutch over the area known as West Irian, as you call it, or the Netherlands New Guinea. Do you anticipate that any way will be worked out in the near future for negotiations with the Dutch on this subject?
If there is any possibility in any way in the United Nations or in any other way, we would appreciate very much that this problem be solved through negotiations.
I understand the Dutch are willing to take it to the World Court. Are you?
But the World Court is different. It is not a legal problem, as I see it and as we see it, Indonesians. The problem of West Irian is a political problem. And the only forum that we thought is the most suitable is the United Nations.
Mr. Minister, the capital of your country, Jakarta, I believe is some 2,000 miles from West Irian. Now, what language or ethnic ties are there between Indonesia and West Irian?
There are so many. All of us, regardless where we are coming from, whether we are coming from Sumatra, from Borneo, Celebes, or New Guinea, Ambon, Indonesia, we are called inlanders. We have a common fate, and it is a fate that is much different from the Dutch colonial group. The Dutch are always classified as the ruling group, and we were classified as the ruled group. And there was no difference between any of us, regardless where we are coming from. Now, someone in Indonesia at this time, like myself, is as an Indonesian, I am free in establishing a political party if I would like to, in joining my political party, in using my own language. But my Irian friend in West Irian at this time, he is not free as yet. He is still forbidden from establishing political parties. He may not join political parties. Political parties are forbidden. He may not even use his own language. He still is forced to teach in the Dutch language. We call that still under colonial oppression by the Dutch government. So for that reason, we would like to have them also share with us these freedoms of an independent and sovereign nation. And if it is a word that is not too much liked by the people in the West, then it is only this word. We would like to liberate them.
In just 60 seconds, we'll continue our story of Indonesia with Mohammed Sharif. But first, hear this.
As safe as our own country. That's what people say about United States savings bonds. And there's a mighty good reason, too. You see, savings bonds can be lost, stolen, mutilated. Yet the Treasury Department will replace each and every one at no charge. And besides being a safe investment, bonds offer the easy, practical way to start saving regularly. You can buy savings bonds either where you work or where you bank. Remember, now, savings bonds are better than ever. The bonds you've bought since February 1st, 1957, pay 3 1/4% interest at maturity. And maturity is now only 8 years and 11 months. But the main thing is to start saving today. Why, in a few years, your savings bond will help you pay for your children's education or build a comfortable retirement for yourself. Ask your payroll office or go to your bank and buy United States Series E savings bonds every month.
The present turmoil in Indonesia is a curious and sometimes cruel amalgam of the political and the human. For part two of this story and the point of view of Mohammed Sharif, Minister Counselor to the Permanent Mission of Indonesia to the United Nations, again, here's Pauline Frederick.
Well, Mr. Ambassador, at the present moment, we are interested in the human problems which this issue between your government and the Dutch government has brought about in your area. Does the Indonesian government believe that expropriation and expulsion are legitimate weapons to be used against Dutch nationals as reprisals for Dutch refusal to negotiate over West Irian?
There's no expropriation at all, and it is not also an expulsion at all. People are free to leave if they would like to, but we request that people who are not having any job at all to leave the country, because they are not of any use to our country. But
if they stay, they would be made uncomfortable, wouldn't they? Be discriminated against?
There is no discrimination as far as foreigners are concerned in our country. There's no difference between an American or a Dutch, etc., but they are afraid themselves to stay.
But hasn't the Indonesian government taken measures to create unemployment among the Dutch? Hasn't it really taken over control of some of the Dutch business?
Well, it is a word that you mentioned. It is taken control only. It is not expropriation. Because expropriation means something else. That is, we take them in our hands and maybe a kind of nationalization and so on.
Then you're going to pay the Dutch for this property you're controlling?
That is not settled as yet. We would like to know first what kind of reaction the Dutch are thinking in this line.
What about those who were born in your country, have never known any other home? Isn't this quite a hardship on them, and why should they be invited to leave, especially the old people?
Well, that is a personal problem on this matter. I would not say that is not a human problem, but in this matter, it is. That's why the government of Holland is also to think of all this before that, because what we are doing at this time have been outlined previously. And that has also many times been mentioned also at the United Nations.
In other words, you've warned the Dutch government if they didn't agree to negotiate that you would do something like this.
All these points have been made clear to them, because there is no other way for us but to press them to come to a better understanding of the problems, because there are still so many problems between Dutch and Indonesia.
Mr. Minister, to what extent can the Indonesian government control all of the territory it now has? I believe some 3,000 islands. I'm thinking particularly of Sumatra, Borneo, and the Celebes.
I think we control them all fully at this time.
But there were reports that for over a year, Sumatra, Borneo, and the Celebes have assumed virtual autonomy. They're run by dissident army officers who collect their own taxes and conduct their own trade.
Well, that is the information here in the United States. But the situation there in our country is, you mentioned about dissident military commanders and so on. We do not call them dissident because they are still under the supreme commander and as the president. They still recognize him as the supreme commander.
And they're not acting on their own.
And they are not acting under their own. They were called now and then also by Jakarta to confer and to give reports on the situation and to solve certain problems, common problems.
Next, to Chicago for another view of the situation in Indonesia. In just a moment on Life and the World.
When the place is fine and the time is right, when the moon is low and the stars are bright,
you make it Pabst, 'cause Pabst makes it perfect.
Yes, Pabst makes it perfect, just as we always have ever since 1844. So next time you make it Pabst, because Pabst makes it perfect. America's Blue Ribbon Beer from the Pabst Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Yes, Pabst makes it perfect.
With the tremendous implication of what is happening in Indonesia, we narrow our focus to the human equation. We know that entire Dutch families are being uprooted, that there is a tremendous exodus from the area. We are fortunate in having a chance to hear now a man who has just returned from Indonesia. He is Mr. Robert Layton, world traveler and lecturer. In our Chicago studio, he talks with Jim Hurlbut.
What were conditions like when you went into Jakarta?
The tension had started real seriously with what they called youth demonstrations, and all the Dutch business houses had been smeared with paint to the effect the Dutch must go, and we want West Irian, which you know is Dutch West New Guinea.
Did you talk to any of the Dutch while you were out there? I'm sure you did.
Yes, and they felt that the population of Indonesia as a whole if given a free choice, would not have put the pressure on the Dutch. They felt that this was something which was fomented by the government. As a matter of fact, many Dutchmen said to me, we don't want West Irian either. It is so underdeveloped that we as Dutch cannot afford to exploit it. On the other hand, the Indonesians, they felt, also will never get enough money to exploit the possibilities. So they can't understand why suddenly the Indonesian government made a big issue of this West Irian, because the people of West Irian, as the Indonesians call it, are totally different. They're different skin, their culture is totally different. It's just a political maneuver on the part of the Indonesian government. That's the impression that the Dutch
had. What did the representatives of the Indonesian government that you talked to have to say about it?
They say that the Dutch, when Indonesia was first given its independence, had promised to sit down and discuss West Irian becoming part of the Republic of Indonesia. And as you know, it never came to an actual discussion point. So after 8 years of getting no place, apparently the heads of the government decided that they would have to put pressure somehow or other. And if you recall, President Sukarno made a speech to the effect that if they didn't get it, he would take measures which would startle the world. And of course, there was no interpretation of that statement at the time. But then immediately after that, if you recall, there was an attempt on Sukarno's life. Mm-hmm. And apparently this, in his own mind, brought the whole thing to a head, so that he felt something had to be done to take the discontent's minds off the internal situation and have them perhaps concentrate their efforts against the minority, which at the moment happens to be the Dutch.
And that's life and the world. I'll be back in just a moment.
This is Jack Barry. That sound you hear speaks more eloquently than any words I could use. It's the sound of an iron lung. Inside, a little girl is held prisoner, waiting for you to free her from this terrible bondage. She's one of 100,000 polio survivors who need your help. Now that Salk vaccine has made polio epidemics a thing of the past, it's a temptation to forget about those already disabled. But every man, woman, and child who's been wounded by polio is a living reminder that the fight is not yet won. They need your dimes and dollars to learn how to overcome their handicaps. Please give to make a polio survivor's life worth living. Join the 1958 March of Dimes. Send your dimes and dollars to your local March of Dimes headquarters. Thank you.
This is Frank Blair concluding this 117th program of Life in the World. Tonight's program was developed through the worldwide facilities of Life and NBC News.
Guest star Don Ameche is your guide to exciting new worlds of nighttime entertainment on Nightline tonight over most of these NBC stations.